Why don't we get started? Good morning. I'd like to call to order the Finance and Administration Committee meeting of September 13th, 2012. First up is the approval of the agenda. You do have an agenda in front of you. Are there any questions or comments? If not, we'll proceed with the agenda as presented. Next up is the approval of the July 12th minutes. I would entertain a motion.
Move approval.
So it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Next up is two action items. The first one is approval to hold second public hearing for New Southern Avenue Bus Garage. Mr. Thomas.
Chair and members of the committee. Here to talk to you about our request for approval to hold a second public hearing for the Southern Avenue Bus Garage. On the background, we did an environmental evaluation for two sites, rebuild plus a rebuild in place option. We held a public hearing on those in July of last year. Before we could finalize our selection from that process, one of the developers came up with a new access to their property, which was significantly different enough to trigger us to go back and do another evaluation and to hold another public hearing. We're proposing to hold the public hearing at the end of October. A couple other changes since the public hearing we had in July of last year. One of the new sites has removed themselves from consideration. They decided that the process was no longer of any interest to them. The rebuild option we've reconfigured. Instead of a 250 bus garage, we've made it better suited for the site to be only 150 bus garage and not with any capability to go to 250 buses. And we also are looking at the build option as being only 150 bus garage initially, but with the capability of expanding it to 250. Got a couple of pictures here for you. So the two sites under consideration are our alternative A, that's the new site, and then the rebuild in place option. What you see now there is the concept for the new garage. And the significant change here is that there, you can see there's the former entrance, which went through an apartment complex, which was not desirable for us. But it also caused some other problems. So the developer has come up with a new entrance, as you can see there in the highlighted in the green. And basically, the new environmental evaluation is looking at the traffic impacts of that new entrance. And then the next slide just shows the smaller version of the what we call alternative C, which is the rebuild in place option. And the last slide is we're recommending that the board grant approval to hold a second public hearing for the Southern Avenue Bus Garage.
Any questions for Mr. Thomas? Thank you. Mr. Bolter?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I notice on page 3 of 66 that there's no operating budget impact. I find that hard to believe.
For this action, there is no operating impact. The action is for the approval to hold the public hearing, so there are no operating impact.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? And I'll entertain a motion. Mr. Bolter, and second. Second by Ms. Cowan. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. This matter has been approved. Next up is the approval for a revised budget for the Potomac Yards Station project. Mr. Thomas.
Yes, so we have two actions here. We are asking for approval to increase the project budget for the Potomac Yard Station project and an accordant increase in the reimbursable project budget. A little background, we're in the middle of preparing an environmental impact statement for the Potomac Yard Station. The current budget that we have that the board has approved is insufficient for us to complete the EIS. And that's just been a strategy that the City of Alexandria has had for incremental funding support. So we're now here for the next increment for the project budget to take it from $3 million to $4.6 million, which will allow us to finish the environmental impact statement. We've got a graphic here just to give the board a sense of what we're studying. We're looking at three options plus the no build. The green option is what we call alternative A. That would be built along the existing track. Our tracks were designed and built back in the day, for a station to be built right at that location, so it already has the grade, the track and the tangent for that station. Alternative B, which is the red one, is a little bit further north of that location, will be built offline and to the east, towards the George Washington Memorial Parkway. And the purple option is option D, which came out of our scoping process in the EIS. That would be built west of the existing rail corridor, in the Potomac Yard area. And so the recommendation is that the board increase the project budget from 3 to 4.6 million, and that the reimbursable project budget be increased as well.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Are there any questions? Mr. Bolter?
You said that option A was originally part of the original system.
Correct.
Why do we have to do it? Why do we have to do an EIS then?
The options that are on the table, all of them triggered the need for the EIS. If we were only studying building the station at that location, we would probably have a lower level environmental analysis. But since there are other options being considered, and there are impacts, there's wetlands impacts, historic impacts, there's the National Park Service property impacts. So the level of impacts are likely to be greater for the other options, which just pushes us into the higher level evaluation.
Any other questions? I had just a quick question. I understand that this is still in the planning phase, but are there further studies that we should anticipate in the coming year?
This is the study that will tell us which solution. We expect to be back to the board in February about to ask for approval to hold a WMATA public hearing. So the EIS will have been advanced to the point where we can publish it for the public and have that public hearing. And the schedule has us, the City of Alexandria selecting its preferred alternative next summer. So, but this is the study that's going to take us through the process to get to a selection of the site.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? And I'll entertain a motion. Okay, we have a and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the matter has been approved. Thank you. Next up are two informational items. The first one is the quarterly capital progress update. Mr. Truth.
Good morning. I'm very pleased to present the year-end report for the fiscal year 2012 capital investments. While we still have significant challenges ahead of us in coordinating and executing the various capital projects, we did have many successes this year. We thank the board, the jurisdictions, and the federal government for providing us the resources to continue to improve the area's transit network. Next slide, please. I keep going. Our investments to date for the capital improvement program were $770 million, which is 84% of the forecasted annual amount of $917 million. As a comparison, this is approximately $159 million more than we spent over fiscal year 2011. Our goals of efficient spending are being realized as we make major strides in improving our production rates. Next slide. As can be seen, the major elements of work are very diverse. We are not just working on the railroad, but also providing capital investments into our bus services, access services, and support initiatives such as asset management and human resources. This comprehensive approach is absolutely necessary if we are to provide all of our customers with a world-class transit service. Safety, reliability, and efficiency are the benchmarks of our capital investment. Each individual project that contributes to the whole of the program benefits our passengers by ensuring the system fulfills the requirements for moving people in this important region and continues to provide economic growth while improving the livability of the community. Two issues which often seem in conflict, but with smart transit are actually quite symbiotic. When WMATA moves forward, the region moves forward. As indicated, we have a major subdivision of work disciplines such as vehicles, rail line contracts, systems and technology, and track and structures. The Network and Electronic Safety and Security Initiative was a major contributor to our ability to expend the majority of the grant funding which was set to expire. This is important as we not only improve the security of the system, but also that we demonstrate we have the accountability to deliver projects within the prescribed time frame. Currently, the project has put in over 400 high-resolution digital IP-based cameras within the system. Next slide, please. I know that the board has heard me speak on our challenges with fasteners and requirements to eliminate backlog and get back to a steady state maintenance. So I wanted to show firsthand what a fastener is and why it is so critical to the operation and reliability of the service. Now, this is a new fastener. This is what a new fastener looks like. This is an old fastener. This is one that was removed from service. No, that is not an original fastener. That came out of A10, which is around the medical center area, okay, on the B route. Beyond the main purpose of the fastener, which is to provide a rail seat that ensures that no lateral or sideways movement of the rail, it also creates an insulating barrier between the rail and the invert. And if you remember from the last quarterly meeting, the invert's the floor of the tunnel. Our traction return current runs through the rails, and it is critical that in order to mitigate stray current and optimize performance of track circuits, the rail be insulated from other ground potentials. Right here, through here, is an insulating material, and as the unit breaks down, so does the insulation. In addition, rust creates a path for electricity. You can see there's a lot of rust there. And that circumvents the insulating material, causing imbalances in traction return. Great current, straight current issues, which causes problems to folks like Washington Gas, and faster deterioration of right-of-way components. DC accelerates corrosion of metal components, which include rail brackets, bond casings, junction boxes, and myriad other devices along the right-of-way. And now when I say DC, I don't mean District of Columbia, but rather direct current. Good fasteners make for a good roadway that maintains traction return isolation and optimizes track circuit performance. Right now, we're using significant amounts of manual labor to install the fasteners, which limits production and requires extensive quality control mechanisms. By automating the process, we should be able to expand the work zones, increase quality, and increase production within the same work windows. Large-scale rehabilitation projects such as this are uncommon throughout the industry. So the work equipment must be specially designed and fabricated. However, once procured, the equipment will be maintained to accomplish our steady-state requirements within a shorter work window and therefore have less impact on our passengers. Next slide, please. Again, our capital transit investment is diverse. The major headers which will be presented here represent a number of individual projects which show equitable spending for all facets of our operations, rail, bus, and metro access. In addition, we are investing in systems which improve operational efficiencies and greater accountability and analysis. Because of the scale of the program and the diversity of the projects, I have arranged the reports within the common headers which are found in your quarterly report materials. This maintains a certain amount of consistency in reporting within the program. However, for the purpose of this presentation, I have only included specific items which may be of concern as it relates to steady state maintenance, passenger focus, safety items, and large scale reportable items. This is to be able to give you a Reader's Digest version of the project elements and not providing unnecessary detail, which is already included within your board materials. As with last quarter, the green is good, yellow is within 15% of the target deliverables, and red is 30% outside of the deliverable target, recognizing that it's against milestones year to date. These individual initiatives are weighted correctly and provide an accurate representation of our earned value for these specific elements within the projects. Maintaining the right-of-way infrastructure, the track and structures, is critical to providing a high quality of service both in terms of reliability and safety. The track structure is a major component of that infrastructure and is essential to positive and consistent capital investment is maintained. Track components in this system do see a heavy-duty cycle, not just in the headways we run, but also in the amount of car consists. Achieving and maintaining steady state is an important goal in reducing required track outages. And while that may seem contradictory, the continued investment in ensuring steady state actually reduces track time requirements because deferred maintenance only creates requirements for larger work windows, and it also accelerates component wear. Underinvestment is not an option, at least not on a railroad that transports 800,000 people per day. Next slide, please. Escalator and elevator rehabilitation and replacement were very good this year, with equitable budget to deliverable ratios. Escalator and elevator rehabilitations fell short by about 15% of plan versus actual, due mainly to a late start of the Orange Blue Line contract, and also because we halted work at the other DuPont escalators to allow for the accelerated replacements of the three south entrance escalators. Next slide. The replacement and rehabilitation of buses and metro access vehicles was on target for fiscal year 2012, with delivery of all planned vehicles within the prescribed time frame and also within budget. Now, while our investment on maintenance facilities lagged behind our projections, this was due mainly to legal issues related with Cinderbed and securing the selection for Southern Avenue, which you had just heard about. However, as can be seen, we have an earned value ratio of 1 based on the percentage of work completed. So we did not spend dollars inefficiently on that. Our expectation is that the Cinderbed issue will be resolved this fiscal year, and other facilities, such as the railcar commissioning facility and police substation, will provide sound investment opportunities. Next slide, please. Major challenges. Now, moving into the next year, we will still be challenged by competition for track time. With so many initiatives on the track, the consolidation of multiple work elements in a single work zone will continue to be a priority as we complete track circuit work, station platform rehabilitation, in-tunnel cable installation for cell phone carriers, and, of course, achieving our steady state maintenance goals for the track items for the six-year program by accelerating a reduction in backlogs. Other challenges continue to present themselves, such as tunnel leaks and spoil intrusion. Because of underinvestment and subsequent accelerated deterioration, we need to continue to use every method possible to increase our productivity. This includes maximizing our work windows and procuring equipment, as well as developing tools which can accurately quantify maintenance data to ensure that the investments are being prioritized and spent wisely. Next slide, please. Given that this is the year-end report for 2012, I would like to focus on some of our major accomplishments during the fiscal year 2012. Carded number 8 hit their target. This closed out this important NTSB recommendation. And you can see by this picture, it's a complicated process, and it requires a significant amount of teamwork among multiple transit or metro departments. I really like this picture. You know, it shows everybody doing the work that they need to be doing, the different groups doing everything in there. I mean, this is really a team effort to be able to pull this off. This is power, track, ATC, operations. You know, it just really is a team effort that we're able to pull that off. The NTSB track circuit replacement, you heard that the FTA has closed out that recommendation. That's part because the replacement of the Alstom Generation 2 track circuits has proceeded very well. We completed the base contract within the prescribed time frame, and option 1 of the contract has already been executed, and the design and manufacturing work has already begun. Next slide. As indicated earlier, the bus program has performed very well, and this is a picture that Jack provided, and he's showing off his fleet and the excellent rehabilitation work his crew does on the engines and the transmissions. Substantial completion of Shepherd's Parkway Bus Garage, and I assume you've also received your invites in the mail for the ribbon-cutting ceremony, so we're looking forward to that quite a bit. The access vehicles are being replaced at the prescribed mileage rates identified by the FTA, and this ensures safe and reliable service for our passengers. This is a picture of the MVI pilot vehicle, which does not have to be modified to provide mobility access. We put these in service in June and July, and so far we've been very pleased with their performance and also their efficiency. Station platforms. Critical infrastructure rehabilitation includes the reconstruct of the station platforms, This is a project that requires significant amounts of track time, as you can see why through the processes here. Platforms challenge our resources on many levels, and we're diligently working to restore this component of our stations, and this ensures the safety of our passengers as well as our ability to keep the station open. The track geometry vehicle. Mr. Kubicek and I took a test ride on the track geometry vehicle last month, and, you know, I was very pleased at the level of diagnostics that we can utilize. Once operational, this will give us the data that I spoke about earlier, which can be analyzed to determine prioritization of investment. The 7K final design was completed and a hard mock-up done, which will be delivered here towards the end of the month. I know that the DGMO is looking forward to conducting tours of the new car and presenting all the great technology that is available on it. We had the final commissioning of the new rail operations and control center. This is what we reference as the ROC, and this means we now have full redundant operational control from two separate geographic locations. Station cooling continues to move at an accelerated pace and involves the replacement of chillers, cooling towers, and air handlers. 2013, moving forward. This provides us with significant opportunities to invest in the system. This means we're investing in safety and reliability. Our goals, obviously, are to continue to address NTSB recommendations. And we've had the delivery of the draft of the system safety analysis, so we can begin to formulate costs that will address those recommendations. Our test track facility was awarded, and work has begun on that, and we will continue to work on many of the same initiatives as last year, such as bus and escalator rehabilitation. Our goal is to increase productivity of items through efficient procurement and work practices and by opening windows of available track time. As I continue to say, one of our most important investments is achieving a steady state of maintenance. Our goals are well-defined, but it does continue to require service disruptions, which are necessary part to ensure the viability of the railroad. Achieving steady state not only produces a rail and bus system that is safe and reliable, but also allows further efficiency of capital dollars. A system that continues to deteriorate does so at an accelerated pace. While a new cross tie may have a 20-year life, a new cross tie that is surrounded by bad ties may have a depreciated life cycle and may only last 10 years. So in order to manage our anticipated growth, we must effectively manage our current resources to maximize our available investments. And this is why I'm really pleased with the progress that we have made throughout the system, but I also continue to recognize that we do have major challenges ahead of us to continue the required pace of installation. That concludes my report, and I certainly welcome any questions.
Thank you for the presentation, Mr. Cooper. Are there any questions? Mr. Downey?
Just one comment. You want to pass it, but I would note that virtually every dollar from the Recovery Act has been spent, which is what the goal was, to get good work done and get it done quickly, and I'm pleased that we can say we've done our part. Thank you.
Ms. Hines and Mr. Downs.
Thanks. Mr. Troop, thanks for this great overview, and you guys have done an awesome job this year. So I think, you know, kudos all around. Please pass that back from the board. So I say that, and then I'm always looking forward and wondering about certain things. So one thing that caught my eye in the moving forward slides was this initiation of the 8-car train implementation study, something that I actually thought had been done before. So could you talk a little bit about what this is about?
Certainly. What we have with the 8-car train study is we have a lot of components that have been enabled for that. We know that, you know, the 8-car train study was done that had provided certain elements of work, you know, being upgrading of the traction power substations, defining where new yards should go, defining where where we can rebuild out certain yards, making definition of station improvements to be able to do that. What we're doing here now with this is an implementation plan. This is an implementation plan to be able to say, we develop a schedule, you know, and say, you know, what's a reasonable schedule to achieve this? And it takes into account all the initiatives that we have to date that have been progressed, whether they be the traction power substation upgrades, what has been funded, what has been done, what has been funded, what lacks funding to be able to achieve this. And then also provides us the tools to be able to go forward and, you know, recommend this so we can have interactive tools to be able to go forward and say these are the requirements that need to be done. We know that some things must be done. We know that some things can be deferred. You know, we know that there's options out there, and we want to really get to a point where we know, are we rehabilitating all of our yards? Are we going to manage certain yards differently and rebuild a new yard? You know, what do we do with all the track equipment? How do we manage the station improvements? And also, it's also taking some of those items that have already been well-defined, and it's moving those towards documents that we can present for bid to, you know, to contractors to be able to actually bid on the work. So that we'll be able to start pushing this thing actual forward from a study into implementation.
So ultimately, I think for our purposes, this is one of the most important capacity initiatives that the agency would undertake to try to get. And we all know how expensive buying the cars is. So part of your implementation study would help us understand those costs of getting to what I think we'd all like to get to is much more eight-car trains. But also a timeline and maybe it's several different ways to approach paying for it?
I think, yeah, that'll be part of it. It'll absolutely be the timeline. It'll be the components that are required for it, what the funding is, the competition for funding, you know, for the different things. And, you know, certainly we can provide details on funding opportunities.
And do you think this will take a year, that you'll be back talking to us about this next year?
That's the timeline that the fellow who was sitting right next to me here and delivering the report, that's what he's been given and charged with. And I have every confidence that he'll be able to deliver that within the time frame.
Okay, great. I have one other question, Mr. Chairman, if I might. We've been working so hard on the red line for so very long, and lots of progress has been made, but one of the things we've talked about here again is how do we communicate to people how much longer it's going to be highly disrupted, and how do you talk to the people on the other lines where we're going to move some of our focus? So do we have a substantial completion target on the red line? Is that even a reasonable thing to ask for?
Well, it's obviously a reasonable thing to ask for. It's, you know, and you know, I hate to say it again, but steady state maintenance. You know, obviously we'll continue to require track time to be able to do these things, particularly on the older lines. So, you know, to answer your question, I don't really have a substantial completion date. Although what we are working towards is being able to really define all those work elements that are required, how we can best manage those, particularly within the red line. In fact, I have a meeting set up with staff next month to go over specifically the schedules on the red line to be able to consolidate those and try to find out where we can do. I mean, we know we have work out there to 2015. There's a lot of items which, you know, came forward, like the track circuit replacements. You know, so the track circuits replacement was not something that we had, you know, expected to do, but that we were required to do. You know, and the red line took up a large portion of that. The neutral host, the carrier service, you know, that there's a lot of work going on now with the neutral host and the carrier services. So hopefully once those items are drawn out, sort of those one-offs, you know, the track circuits and the neutral host, we can draw off those one-offs. We got our station platforms done. I mean, that was, we started looking at these, and there was a greater level of deterioration on those than we had anticipated. You know, once we started taking them apart, we said, gee whiz, you know, we need to get in there and do more work on these, because the last thing we wanted to do was to, you know, 4 or 5 years later say, oh, gee whiz, we're going to do the second half of the platform now, and we're going to inconvenience you again. So we decided we'd take care, you know, advantage of those work windows, you know, right now. So once sort of those one-offs go on, we'll be able to get back to more of a, you know, a prescribed maintenance schedule and to be able to do that. You know, again, I mean, you know, where we are now, the condition of the red line that's out there, I mean, I don't see any relief until, like I said, you know, I had said before, I believe 2015. And, you know, we'll be able to define how well we can do it. The shutdowns are significantly helpful. And we do have a tendency to get a lot of work done in there. We can get multiple efforts in there to be able to do those. But, again, you know, we recognize how this, you know, impacts our passengers. So.
Thanks.
Mr. Downs?
Thank you. I'm also impressed with the ability to ramp up the capital outlays. I know how difficult it is to go from almost ground zero to $1 billion a year worth of carefully managed construction. I wanted to ask a relatively small question, and that is, for the last 3 years, we have been underfunding or under-obligating maintenance equipment. This is the third year in a row where we have a significant shortfall. Is there a reason for maintenance equipment being hard to obligate?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Mr. Downs, in regards
Your maintenance equipment is at 56% this year.
I'm sorry, sir.
Maintenance equipment is at 56%.
For the expenditure rates, you mean?
For the expenditure rates.
Yes.
And it's been under target for the last 3 years.
No, I'm sorry, I understand now, yes. It's delivery schedules is what it's to the manufacturer. I mean, we have provided the information to the manufacturer. It's just, you know, there's just a huge competition for manufacturing space. You know, the you know, as you know, that the class ones, particularly the freight railroads, are investing heavily into their infrastructure as well. They're procuring new equipment. We're in those cycles, you know, where a lot of people are buying new equipment. So that's one of the issues that we have, is just in being able to solicit and get the equipment on board. We do think next year we should recover all that. I mean, that's, you know, moving out. That's one of the questions we had. The solicitations took longer than anticipated on some of the procurements and solicitations. We had, you know, items such as, you know, non-competitive Buy America, some of these items, you know, we went down a certain road, you know, we managed to that, and then, you know, we had to sort of reevaluate how we looked at things. For example, you know, the Giesmeier 360, we wanted to get another one, but we were not able to. You know, we could only get one that would do a 270 turn. So, you know, stuff like that is part of the challenges that we have moving forward. And I'm sorry, again, too, you know, our property is a little bit different than the TA and how we do work. So some of the, you know, and some in the CTA and you know, SEPT and some of the larger scale. So some of the equipment that we're getting is somewhat specialized to us because we are working in these very narrow work windows. And, you know, our ability to make equipment more compact, you know, so there is some specialty that they're providing to us on that.
A second question. We missed again on our obligation target for the year, even though we've shown a significant increase in the obligation rate. And that provides a buffer about the impact on weekend service closures, track access. While you list track access as the significant constraint in the delivery of the capital program, rail system rehab has the highest obligation rate and delivery rate. What is the capacity? This is a future going question, probably to be addressed in the 14 budget. What's the limit of track access against the obligation targets? We have a limited capacity, not a limitless capacity, based on our customers' need for some mobility for access. What's the impact going forward of reaching full obligation, full delivery? As we probably will reach in the next year, on rail scheduling. I know that we have in the past had some pretty aggressive rail scheduling and a lot of technology that allows programming for that. Forecasting our ability to have access to the system against our expenditure target is something that I think affects everybody in the system and needs to be publicly talked about, I think, in a way that helps the public understand what the limits of both the capital program and the availability of the rail system.
And one of the initiatives that we have, in fact, next month I'm meeting with the consultant on this, is, you know, we're defining a play, you talked about the scheduling that we're doing, and we're defining a you know, basically what would be a playbook to say, you know, where we can get single track outages, perhaps even taking, you know, 3-inch single track outages on a line without impacting headway. Whether or not we can do that, we'll see. But being able to say, you know, what's our maximum headway that we can live with, as, you know, defined by y'all, and saying, okay, where can we maximize our work efforts in there? Perhaps we can work between, you know, 2 interlockings or 3 interlockings instead of 2 to be able to stretch those work windows out. So that analysis is going on there. And one of the things I think probably Mr. Kubitschek would agree with me, we are reaching our capacity for, you know, track outages and single track efforts and that type of thing. So again, it's a matter of, when I say, you know, that it's critical, it's not so much getting more track time, but utilizing the track time that we have. Now, our delivery to our capacity to deliver projects on the outside of the track. The reality is that Center Bed and Southern were a huge driver in not you know, achieving part of our goals this year as far as the expenditure rates. We didn't anticipate the lawsuit to last so long. We anticipated to move forward with Southern quicker. So that would have been actually probably put us upwards almost close to 90% had we been able to execute those. So additionally, we have worked programmatically, you know, as a corporation to be able to define specific issues and as a corporation be able to take care of them. Items such as procurement. How can we accelerate? You know, I always talk to these guys about, you know, the left side of the schedule. That's where a lot of time can be taken up, on the left side of schedule. You know, once we start a job, once we get it done, once the contract is done, we can execute that project fairly well. You know, we can get that work done fairly well. It's the left side of the schedule. What in procurement can we do? What's holding us up? Some of the items like terms and conditions, you know, for some of the IT projects. That was a determination that was made. Is that really is holding, you know, processes up to be able to get those? Council procurement sat down. They worked together on it, you know, and we've been able to, you know, define that. So, you know, and the other thing is, too, is for everybody to understand what the procurement issues are. You know, we all have optimistic views sometimes. You know, we say, you know what, I'm going to put out an RFP, and it's going to go out, and I'm going to be able to award the contract within within 2 months. And the reality is this just doesn't happen. So it's also not only, you know, taking care of, but educating the project managers and the project team on issues with procurement. So the capacity for delivery is also constrained by, you know, realistic processes and procedures that are in place and how we manage those and get those to move forward more quickly, and to be able to be ahead of a lot of those things. You know, so I think that, you know, that's one of the things, that was one of the initiatives that we focused on last year to be able to set ourselves up to be able to achieve the expenditure rates this year for what we have forecasted, that we didn't have things hanging out there like procurement items or something that would be lasting into 6 months into the fiscal year.
I'd just like to add that a couple things that were mentioned earlier impact our ability to spend. One is improving productivity. And part of that is getting the new track equipment, which we've gotten a lot of new track equipment. We have more to come. That will help. Also, in this year, probably this coming fiscal year, there's not a lot of money being spent on the new rail cars because they're not in production yet. We start seeing those come in. There's going to be a lot of capital expenditures for that. It's been mentioned but hasn't gotten much notice that since July of this year, because we got out of the garden number 8, we have been able not to have planned outages midday during the weekdays, which is positively impacting our on-time performance. That was one of the benefits of the gain in productivity that we've seen with the weekend shutdowns and the single tracking. So we're very cognizant of that as we schedule. So I wouldn't look at, Rob's absolutely right, we're trying to get as much productivity out of the weekend work. And because of the way it's set up, it is much more productive. We're not spending a lot of time getting in and out, you know, for a few hours of work, right, like we have to do at night or during the day. So that's extremely important to us, and I just lost my train of thought. but what that does, you know, all this work allows us to get more work done and to impact the passenger less. I'm quite cognizant of the fact that when you're doing weekend work, you're doing shutdowns, which we try to move around the system, that we're impacting passengers. I did the bus shuttle this weekend. By the way, I will mention, though, however, I caught my connecting train faster by using the bus shuttle than if I had taken the train. Thank you, Jack. I want to mention one other thing on the Red Line. Rob mentioned before and showed you what a track fastener looks like on the Red Line. That's from a lot of water infiltration is one of the causes of that. We have to address that. And I know Rob and his crew is working on how we're going to address that. But that is going to be a major effort probably in the not-too-distant future, which once we get done with engineering, we'll come back and talk about.
Thank you. Okay, we have Ms. Hampshire-Cowan, and then
I'd like to join with my colleagues in commending the outstanding execution. Back as I read the report, I went back to my old reports, and I was like, is this possible? So it's really to be celebrated. But I also want to commend the presentation of the information. And I know that for me, maybe last year as a freshman, it was hard to keep up and understand where are we, and reminding ourselves we're really on a journey. It's a long journey. And so not just what we've done in this year, but where are we in the continuum? And I think this report certainly gives a clear picture of where we are on the journey, and that's really important, I think, for us as board members to chart progress, but also in terms of our customers to understand, because when you kind of know where you are, you have a little more patience about, you know, how we get there. I do have one technical question, though. On the track and structure slide, there's a reference to floating slab rehab. And it appeared that's the only one that you didn't make your goal, and it seems substantial. So I'm really trying to understand what is that exactly, and does it have a ripple effect of impacting other things?
The floating slab rehab is there's in order to reduce noise and vibration within the system, there's the, say, the bottom of the tunnel. Then there's a concrete pad that sits on top of that with these donuts. I don't know if you were here at the last quarterly report, but they're less than metallic, like rubber pads that are look like a hockey puck about this big, and they sit the concrete pad sits on that on those donuts. And what happens is those donuts get compressed over time. They're supposed to have a 30-year life cycle. We have found that that's not the case because of the specific donut they had gotten. So these donuts get compressed in time. So what you have basically is the concrete floor sitting on the concrete floor. It's a very labor-intensive process to be able to go and change these concrete pads because what you have to do first is you have to core drill the concrete out to be able first to get underneath, you know, and then you have to jack up with hydraulic jacks. This whole system of hydraulic jacks, probably about 36 hydraulic jacks that are set up to be able to lift this, you know, large concrete slab up. You get in, you pull the old rubber pad out, and then you slide in, you put the new rubber pad out, and then you slide it down. This is one of the things that we're looking at as, again, you know, like some of the specialized equipment that we're talking about to be able to, you know, accelerate these processes. That specific one, there really isn't, you know, rippling effects, you know, right now. So, you know, obviously it's something that we want to, you know, be able to get to. And also what happens is when the pad falls, your track elevation changes, you know, because the rail sits on the pad, so it starts to fall. So your profile starts to change, so you have to put wedges in underneath the rail. So there's some of those rippling effects that occur, you know, and it's a different item that has to be, you know, checked by our track walkers. So, you know, it's another thing that they're looking at, you know, are the shims in place, are they okay, and that type of thing. So.
First of all, we have Mr. Barnes and Mr. Bulger, then Mr. Downey.
I want to join in saluting everybody who's doing all this hard work. Sometimes when I go to sleep at night, I think I'm going to sleep, and all those folks are heading into the tunnels to work all night. And on weekends when I'm goofing off, I realize there are a lot of people out there working very hard, and that's, I know that's appreciated by everyone in the region who relies on our system to get around and hopes it will be safe and reliable. A couple of provincial questions.
One, I work near DuPont Circle, and every day in the office, somebody will ask me, when is this, the South Station going to open? You gotta.
Scheduled.
You gotta.
As scheduled, which is, I believe, towards the end of October. If that's the case, yeah, towards the end.
We're still saying October, next month?
Yep.
Okay, that's what I've been telling people. I hope it works out. The other very parochial question, because the station on the other end of my commute is Bethesda, and are we still looking at 14 for the escalators, or is there any chance of moving that up?
Actually, there isn't, just because of the manufacturing design elements that have to occur in order for that. So, I mean, it's just so that's one of the issues that we have. You know, we have to get the contract. The designer has to come in, make the designs on it, and then they have to manufacture the escalator step. So that's the work will precede that, but you won't see any work until that time frame.
Okay.
And the stairs.
One last question. Now, this is very dramatic to look at the difference in those fasteners. Do we have fasteners like this old one still out there?
We have fasteners like this old one still out there. Now, and I don't want to alarm anybody, because we do have track inspections, which look at these things. We have, just because one fastener bad doesn't mean the railroad, is in an unreliable condition. But again, like I said, the balance is, these are put in place in order that they not only provide support for the railroad, but they also provide support for each other, as far as deterioration goes, how far they're spaced. But what the interesting thing about the work efforts that I'm talking about being able to progress this capital program, is we used to have track walkers in that area every single day because of the defects that we would found, and we knew that we had to look at it, in that volume of work. But now because we are seeing fewer and fewer defects, we can minimize that to our regular track, which is two or three times a week. The regular track walker inspections are two or three times a week. So we're very pleased in the progress that we're making here. I mean, we see items like that, which obviously, other people don't. But that's, we see the defects going down. So you know what? Pull this back to twice a week. We're comfortable that we can do that. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Bulger, then Mr. Dan.
I'll just ditto what my fellow colleagues said about the report. I wanted to ask a future-oriented question. And I think all of us have learned about all of these subparts and elements and technology. I just want to know that 20 years from now, when the Silver Line is 20 years old, that we have taken all our knowledge that we've gained, like this fastener and others, and put it in the Silver Line as it's getting built right now. So for my friends from Virginia, so you're not sitting here 20 years from now seeing a fastener fall apart. So is that happening? Am I comfortable with? Are we just building the same stuff?
Can I just add to that? Yes, we're going to build the latest, and we've learned. However, if 20 years from now, this authority has not done the necessary reinvestment and reconstruction of the system and maintenance of the system, they'll have the same thing you have today. That's the technical part. Well, that's the more important part, because we are, having the latest advances in technology, all that kind of stuff. We learn from what we've built. But if we don't provide the funding to do the preventive maintenance and the reconstruction, you'll be back in the same spot. That's the more important point.
Mr. Downey?
I just wanted to offer a comparison. I was in Vienna this summer. The one in Austria, not the one where I lived. And we went to ride the Red Line on the Vienna subway, got to the station, and the word was, when we finally got somebody to explain it, it was closed for the summer for rehabilitation. The entire central section closed for 2 months. And I inquired of a few passengers, and they were really unhappy.
Any other questions for Mr. Church? With that, I'd like to also thank you for your excellent presentation. I think the key thing here was to show how these capital improvements lead to a safer, more reliable system, and I think
although there's a lot of inconvenience to our passengers because of some of the closures, I think this is in the best interests of them in the long term for all of us. So I do thank you for the good work, and we've come a long way over the course of the years with our capital investments. Next up is our FY 2014 budget development. Ms. Kisler.
Thank you. I'd like to first just go back to the major budget issues for future considerations that you included in your adopted budget, just to step us back through that. So you tasked us with continuing the multi-year business and financial planning, providing the board with those tools to make those multi-year decisions. We also were looking to continue our goals to sustainability and efficiencies, program sustainability, slowing the growth of the cost curve, human capital, filling those vacancies, getting those right people in those positions, and customer enhancements. Also, you asked us to start putting in place the tools to make better decisions, business intelligence, those types of tools, and then to start planning for the future. So with that in mind, I'd like to begin our presentation here on the 14 budget development. So I'll first start with where we ended up 2012. Through effective cost management and an active hedging program, we were able to come in under budget. This allowed us to fund emerging needs as they occurred throughout the year and accomplish more work than we possibly could have. Salary and benefit underruns were basically offset our overtime overruns, so you could look at labor as being balanced. The access contracts and other contract savings that we had helped us overrun some emerging needs we had to buy parts and materials to support some accelerated maintenance activities, so we were able to get all of that done through prudent management. Revenue forecasting. On the revenue side, quite remarkable, actually. We came within 0.25% of our forecast, which is quite good. I know there was puts and takes. I just contrast that to last year. We were about within 3%, which is some $25+ million. So a remarkable improvement, and we've got future improvements to our model, which I'll talk about shortly, that should help us even tighten or hopefully maintain that number. Better not try to hit more than 0.25%. That's quite good, though. Next slide, please. Our rail and bus ridership. We've talked about this before. Rail ridership was about 1% below budget, but still about 0.5% above last year's budget. And then bus ridership was quite high, about 8 million trips, or 6.5% above budget, and that's roughly the same from last year. It's about 7 million or 6% above budget from last year. We started the year and with a lot of favorable weather, and I think some adjustments we had to make to our model. We started the year, we were averaging about 8 or 9% favorability on the bus. You can see there as we got towards the last 4 months of the year, we're really closely tracking that forecast now. We think we've got the forecast nailed. We'll give you an update next month on our revenue forecast at the board meeting. And at that time, we'll talk about the model. We've updated our model with the latest in historical forecast information. We'll have the variables in from Moody's on our economic factors, population and so forth, regional employment, population, hotel rooms, all these things that impact our models. Policy variables, we'll factor in the overall fare levels, the federal transit benefit reduction, and next fare. Just giving you a look ahead, so far what we've seen from Moody's, it's been the employment results for DC have been positive, but again, we're a little too early to give you the full picture. This chart is blank. Just kidding. We're showing you here the multi-year budget development. We focus on a multi-year budget. I think that was very successful last year and helped frame for you some of those decisions that we made in 12 and the impacts they would have in the out year. So in 12 and 13, better bus. You can see the chart. We're looking at budget development on the service initiatives. We're going to build on the progress made in support of our critical safety and cost savings initiatives. We're going to address the core service, and we're going to continue to expand rail and bus begun in 12 with our very successful Rush Plus and Better Bus. And management efficiencies are also going to be a key focus. We head into 13, 14.
So you can see here in safety, I was reading through the safety report. It's pretty remarkable what's been achieved in the last 5 years in the safety fund. I've only been with the organization for about 10 months, but as I was reading through this report, it's phenomenal. The, you know, instituting that culture of safety in the organization is really the most important thing. And I know Jim Doherty and the GM live and breathe that, and everyone else. We've reduced employee and passenger injury rates by double digits for the last two consecutive years. It's remarkable. I'm improving communication with employees about safety. Building a safety department. The safety department's nearly double now what we had in 2010, and it's seven times what we had in 1997. And those are very highly skilled, talented, trained employees. We're very proud of our safety department. Invested in critical rail infrastructure. I think Rob talked to you a lot about that, and you see the link to safety there. Improving bus safety, metro access safety, escalator safety across the board. That will continue to be a focus in our in all we do, and you'll see that reflected in our budget request. Next, please. Slide. You also asked us at the last meeting in May and in June again to make sure that we're cognizant of the risk to the budget. So what we attempted to do here was to portray for you some of the risks that we have. And the way we look at this chart is just to give you a feel. So for starting from the left, we don't have salary and wage increases built into the base budget at this time. We have the step increases, but not the salary and wages. If there was to be a 1% across the board salary increase, this would be represented by that first bar. It's about a $9.5, $10 million hit, just to give you a feel for the magnitude of what these are. Jobs. Jobs are one of the prime determinants in our revenue forecasting. Not a big surprise. So if we were to see a 0.5% reduction in the jobs in the region, that would be a significant, about a $9 million reduction in our revenues. And with the threat of sequestration, of course, that plays right into that. Retirement. You know that the retirement's gone up 20-30% in 12 to 13, and again, we're looking at the same for 13 to 14. We're only halfway through 12. We base our retirement estimates, the pension estimates, on the prior 2 year, on a 2 year look back. So, there's a lot of uncertainty in the market right now. So, if let's just say another 5% increase in the employer share would represent $7 million there. Power propulsion. We've been very lucky in the last couple of years with very favorable rates. Maybe one of the benefits to the down economy is that those rates have been very low. And we've benefited well from them and from our hedging program, which is not a savings program, but it certainly introduces certainty and allows us to manage our program much better. So if a 4% increase in the rate of power and utilities would be about a $4 million increase. Weather. This was the one that surprised me. A one-day shutdown of the federal government would cost us $2 million. Fuel and diesel, a 10-cent increase in the amount that we pay per gallon is about $1 million. That's a pretty easy one to remember. So for every dime, we have $1 million swing. So, again, I want to emphasize and not leave this slide without talking about sequestration. It will impact jobs in the D.C. area and such a huge number of our riders work for the federal government, and half of our capital program is funded with federal dollars. So we're very, very aware and very nervous about that. When we left you in May, we gave you this area chart that was very difficult to follow. What we're trying to show you here is the growth in the budget, in the base budget. So what this chart depicts is the growth from 13 to 14 is about $76 million. Unfunded at this time, and then you can see the growth from 14 to 15 and 15 to 16. We're putting in place a series of savings or our ideas where we can reduce our costs. Things like using, you know that we have a $28 million surplus from fiscal year 12. We would propose to use that to offset this growth. We still have $2 million remaining from the 11 surplus. And management efficiencies, we're proposing $14 million that we've identified in management efficiencies. The impact of the smart fare, the increased use of smart fare, people are loading a lot more value on that smart fare. That's helping us on our revenue side and so forth. So we've identified almost $50 million worth of savings that if we apply to this deficit, if you go ahead, you can see now that the deficit shrinks from $76 million
in 14 to about $25 to $30 million. And there's still much more work to be done. In the budget development process, the general manager has tasked us to find further efficiencies, and we'll be putting pressure on all of the cost centers. However, that still leaves us with a still leaves us with a gap in 14 and 15. So how do we address that? I think the important thing to remember is there's more than one way to put pressure on the cost equation. You could make service adjustments. You could increase fares. You could look for further efficiencies. Or you could increase subsidies. Just for representation, we portray a 5% fare increase. If you were to grant a 5% fare increase in 2015, it would have this effect. So that would take you to a more manageable curve, certainly reducing the $165 million in growth down to something that's something more manageable. And as I said, we're continuing to put pressure on the multi-year budget. Slide, please. So this chart, I stepped you briefly. On the left side of the chart, I talked briefly about these initiatives that we've already identified. We've come up with almost $50 million in savings, and we're continuing to work for more. We're quite confident in the budget development process. We're going to come back to you with more ideas for efficiencies and savings. And then we talked earlier on the right side of the risks and increases. I didn't total these because these are meant to just be representative to give you a feel for the magnitude of each of these risks. And I'm sure there's other risks. We've done our work to find efficiencies, but there's still a lot more work to do. And we're continuing to do that. The thing to remember is that chart I just showed you with the roughly $25 million increase does not include any new initiatives. That is the base service. We would launch the Silver Line. We would continue the next bus that you approved last year, but no new initiatives beyond that. So this is, as we kick off the budget season, we'll be back to you in October. As I said, we'll have a revenue forecast update for you, which will really now start to help us get our hands around the size of the issues. We'll have an operating budget discussion. Then, as you can see there, we'll head into the capital budget discussion. And I look forward to working with all of you in the future. That completes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Are there any questions? Mr. Downey?
Yes, as we move forward on the risk items, and I agree these are all risk items, I think it would be appropriate as we discuss the budget going forward to really identify what we are assuming. Now, let's take something as simple as weather shutdowns. $2 million hit. Are we assuming there'll be none? Are we assuming there'll be the average of one? Assuming what we so that we really know that we've been prudent in the kinds of assumptions we're making, not overly optimistic.
Thank you. Ms. Hudgens?
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation, and it really does highlight, I think, what we all want to see as we look at what this can happen in a multi-year planning process. But I wanted to go back to the general manager's comments earlier about the long-term commitment to maintenance and capital and align it with the long-term commitment to operation, because over the years our source has been, with only a few exceptions, going to our customers. And I think one of the things that we as a body are going to have to take the steps and to restart the conversation of a dedicated source of operational revenue, because all of the things that we've been able to accomplish, we want to be able to maintain and grow from. And the sources are not the sources that are readily available to do that. And so I think it's a good opportunity that this kind of sets a juncture for us to see how that can happen. But I think the slide does a very good job of starting that introduction for us.
Thank you. Mr. Barnes and then Mr. Nicholas.
Well, my question was going to really follows on exactly what our chair just said, because I'm concerned, as my colleagues know, we're in this strategic planning process, and you indicated that the three-year plan doesn't include any new initiatives other than the Silver Line and ones that we already know we're doing. And at some point, we're going to have to recognize that we need a lot of new initiatives, and we're going to have to find a way to fund them, or this system's just going to not be able to handle its responsibilities in the future. I guess I would suggest that we begin to develop in our financial team here some numbers about what we really are going to need. We need to expand our core stations. We know that. There are already some of them at capacity today. And I keep repeating that statistic that we were told at the beginning of our strategic planning process, that the city of Houston is planning to move here over the next 30 years. 2 million more people in the Washington region in the next 30 years. And we're at capacity now in many areas of our system. So we begin, I think we need to begin to develop some serious numbers. What would it, we got to build a new tunnel under the river. This is billions of dollars we're talking about that we're going to have to spend to do the things we need to do. But we ought to begin to put together some real numbers of what we need over the next 10, 15, 20 years to do what we need to do, and to pick up on what the chair just said, to think seriously as a board and as a community how we're going to make this happen, because we need to make it happen.
Mr. Nichols?
Thank you very much, and I fully agree with all of those comments. I think that it's, from a leadership standpoint, Michael couldn't be more accurate and consistent with all the comments there, that part of our responsibility is to govern, but part of it is to educate all of our constituencies about what the real costs of running the system are. And I think that educating our stakeholders who have to fund it, not only the riders, but also the local and federal government who are required to invest in it. We're getting better at it, but we've got to do a much better job of providing data that can stand up to challenge about the cost of the system so that everyone can be informed when they make those decisions. And it's really moving in very much the right direction. I think that the quality of the data that's the framing of this information this morning is a big step forward. I think there are a lot of we've got to go a lot further. There's a danger in oversimplifying things when we move it at this level, but certainly I think from a governance standpoint, this is, we can talk about the key issues that are important from a board level that we need to make, and the stakeholders and everybody who watches us can get a better idea of exactly what we're confronting. I do have a few specific questions. I can kind of do them one by one or kind of all together. Thank you. The first one, as it relates to the slide that discusses the actual versus the 2000 year 12 budget, and we note that we came in under budget, which is good. Give me a sense of how of coming in under budget with compares with achieving our objectives that were intended to arise out of that budget. When we came in under budget, did we hit all of our key goals, or is the fact that we came in under budget reflective of any key goals that we didn't achieve? Just tie that for me, please.
Sure. Well, primarily it's driven by energy. I mean, the labor, we offset our labor. We came down some labor. Our services, you know, basically there's three components to our service hour. There's labor, there's fuel, and there's other, you know. And we came in balance on those two. We're very favorable on our energy costs.
Okay.
So that was the primary driver. We did deliver the additions. We started to move definitely in the right direction in the HR. We've gone through an extensive recruiting, outreach, and hiring, so we're hitting those marks.
Okay.
The new services we introduced that you granted early on the bus service, we got that service up and going. So I would say we're hitting on those marks, yes.
Thank you. The next slide that relates to the rail ridership and bus ridership, and we've had a lot of dialogue about both of these numbers over the course of the year. It's not just a new data today, but it, again, it still strikes me that that the rail ridership down 1.1%, bus ridership up 6.5%. Could you talk a little bit about the implication of those up and down numbers and why, again, this morning, they're at variance, why we see an increase in bus ridership, why we see a decrease in rail ridership, and is our investment in resources consistent and reflective of that? Just talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, as it pertains to the projection and the variance from that projection, I think with the bus is the big one. We are now collecting that bus ridership information, and we've talked about this in the past. We now actually have the ability to more accurately collect that information, so that had some variance. The weather was remarkably warm last year, so we had an excellent, excellent performance on the ridership. On the rail, I think you might see some of the impacts of the closures and so forth. There was some weather events. We had weather events. The earthquake, I think, impacted rail quite dramatically.
But the key thing is we're not down year over year. We're down versus the budget. We're actually slightly up in terms of rail ridership over the previous year. Okay.
So those are kind of the explanations of the delta. As I said, if you look at the right side of the bus graph, you'll see that we're now hitting those marks. We had actually anticipated the economy to maybe slow down a little bit, the construction, because one of the key drivers for the bus ridership are construction jobs. And we had anticipated those jobs slowing down more quickly than they had. And then when finally they caught up with our forecaster, we were slightly ahead of the trend. We're now hitting those marks a lot more closely. We're anticipating that going into 13, we're going to track much more closely.
Okay.
Second part of your question, I'm sorry.
Well, I think you actually answered the question. But just to key in on one, you said the construction
jobs,
and these are folks who are using the system in support of the construction industry?
I think it's a factor of jobs and construction. So people are coming in, and it's the population, and the construction jobs are related. So they're building these, you know, there's these types of activities going on. The construction and the jobs and the population are linked. But for whatever reason, it has a much closer correlation in bus than it has in rail. Rail is just jobs. But in bus, one of the key correlating factors is construction jobs, interestingly.
Interesting. Okay. And then I just have one final question, if I may. In terms of risks, clearly, and then the dialogue we had before is reflective of it, there is an enormous investment going on, ramped up dramatically, which, and as the general manager said, it's been long overdue, and it's being fast-paced at a rate that, frankly, we'd rather not have to do it at this rate, I would presume, but it's required because of the deficit that we're in from a maintenance standpoint, from a capital standpoint. So it's an enormous effort. And as fast as it is, it's not as fast as our customers and stakeholders would like it. Frankly, not as fast as we'd like it. Fixing the physical infrastructure. At the same time, we are improving two other aspects of infrastructure. One is our human capital. We're having, in terms of training, as well as expanding our talent, associating the talent that we need to run today's system and upgrading that. So we've had to hire people, we've had to retrain people, and we are also building new infrastructure, management infrastructure, tools, software, systems, and we've been talking about that, and that's in a rapid pace. Can you, from a risk standpoint, can you give us a grade in terms of how far we've come in terms of improving our own management infrastructure to be able to accurately and adequately manage what we've got going on? Because I realize that we present management with a lot of systems that don't talk to each other, a lot of data sources that are segregated and isolated in ways that are highly inefficient and create a real challenge for our management team. How far have we come, and how much farther do we have to go in terms of getting our management infrastructure and our tools in a state of good repair, just as we do the systems?
I think I'll answer that. I think that just like on the physical infrastructure, as you know, we've come a long way. I think we've made a lot of progress. And as you noted, that we're in the midst of hiring a number of people to help us maintain and as well as expand the system with the sewer line. Just as on the physical infrastructure, we have a ways to go. We have to get the structure fully in place, and that's not totally in place. We'll work on that. We have to get the people all hired and trained. We've hired a substantial number already this year. We have much more to go, and as well as for next year, in anticipation of solar line. So we've got, you know, if I were to guess, 2 or 3 years before we're going to hit steady state with a trained workforce, an organized, an organization that has stabilized, and systems that are in better shape than they are today. That's my judgment.
What from a risk standpoint, can you, is it reasonable to talk about in terms of where we are on that infrastructure as a risk that we need to manage for our, or that we need to be monitoring?
I'm not sure what you mean by
well,
risk.
Well, when I think of, we talked about the budget risk, and we were talking about the things that go into the budget. But from a governance standpoint, for us, there's also the risk of having full and adequate understanding of what our full costs are, what our risks in terms of being able to understand all of the things that are going on, being able to have all the tools in place that you require as a systems manager to really fully understand and monitor the system that's going on. And I know that you obviously are mitigating that with all kinds of things, whether it be people walking tracks, whether it be doing things that you would otherwise do in a different way, but is there a risk that we should have in terms of understanding our success that we should be managing there as well? And my question is probably a little esoteric, but it really is one that I lay awake thinking about.
Yeah, I lay awake thinking about a lot of things around here.
I know.
As you improve the organizational structure, as you improve the human capital, we will operate more efficiently. So risk today is we're not operating as efficiently as we can be when we structure things. We talked about the capital program before in terms of productivity, improving that, which also comes from a well-trained workforce and the right equipment in place, but also from the organizational viewpoint and the staffing of the management of that, the improved training and professionalism of the staff and the organizational structure to support that will provide for more efficiencies. So we'll operate more efficiently, we'll get things done a little faster, and the quality will improve. So those are all risks, if you want. If you look at it in the inverse, those are risks that you deal with now. Just like Rob mentioned before, when the track fasteners aren't in good shape, you inspect more. Well, that's an inefficiency, really, that you're spending time on doing more track inspection, but it's absolutely required. So as we get better systems in place, we will not have to do as many things manually as we have to do. We'll be able to track costs better than we do today. And these are all risks that you run today. We control them, we manage them, but in the future, as long as we continue to apply ourselves, we will get tighter on those types of things.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Downs and Ms. Bowser.
One of the things that I've come to expect of a professional budget process is lessons learned in the execution of the previous year's budget, estimates that were either above or below. No budget executes perfectly as planned. Lessons like how the revenue forecast has been a consistent variable. And revenue forecasting, I understand, is a crystal ball exercise, at least in part. But there are lessons learned about how we continue to improve revenue estimates on ridership. The same with estimating power and fuel cost has been a consistent over budget for the last 3 years. And I understand trying to master forecasting in the power markets and fuel markets is an obscure science at best, but there are lessons to be learned there about what we have learned over the last couple of years. I'm impressed with the improvements in the budget process. They're significant. They're lasting. I think a continuous improvement process would begin to look at, in understandable terms for the public and for the board, what kinds of lessons we learned about the preparation and execution of the previous year's budget. That's part, in my mind, of a multi-year budget process. The second comment is about multi-year budgeting. Multi-year budgeting is not 12, 13, and 14. Multi-year budget is at least 14 and 15. Forecasting ahead for a context, we're trapped in this 12-month cycle. We get a 12-month snapshot. Mr. Barnes' comment about strategic planning and the beginning to address longer-term issues tends to get lost in a 12-month snapshot. The board has said consistently, we're interested in starting at least a two-year forecast of revenues and expenditures for the budget coming, which would envision the full capture of the operation of phase one of the Silver Line, forecasting changes in ridership as a result of adjustments in bus service, ridership trend analysis that we might expect longer term, cost forecast. I think it's reasonable to expect, after having said that a number of times, that we actually start a budget process that has a context, not just for 14, but 14 as a context as well for 15, trying to make some sense out of where we're going instead of trying to drive by the rearview mirror. A specific question in the presentation, it says on page 51, fiscal year 2014, major cost drivers and risks. It says pension is the largest growth area by dollar at $29 million forecast for 14. I saw a memo from, I think, the chief financial officer or maybe the general manager on a variety of issues about revenue and finance. It had a footnote that made a estimate of the current unfunded liability in the pension system. As of fiscal 11, it was an update. I would hope that we get a update of the unfunded pension liability to the most current date, perhaps the end of calendar year 12, as a context for continuing to struggle with the long-term investments around the pension system. The other is understanding the Smart Trip fare impact. You've got a $4 million positive for 14, and I have never seen that number. I don't know if anybody else has seen that number before.
In terms of the unfunded liability, it's a great, our financial statements will be completed, and I think, Alan, I think we're coming to the board in October. So on those financial statements, you'll see the unfunded liability, which, as you point out, is growing, and it should be a major concern. The health retiree, the OPEB, other benefits, which is on our balance sheet, and we are required to report, is quite large and is going to be something that's obviously something that's unsustainable. But to your other point about Smart Trip,
well, there's a difference between pension liabilities and unfunded health care liabilities.
Yes, there is. Right. We have about 4,500 retirees, and we are required to provide those health benefits to them in the future. So that's a liability that's large and is on our financial statements. As far as the other point on the Smart Trip, we had a, I had a difficult time trying to articulate how to describe this in the chart. So let me describe what it is. When a it's how we record revenue. So as you can imagine, now that we have many people using Smart Trip cards, when they load value on their Smart Trip cards, we actually record revenue as they tap. So as they use the the system, that's when we record revenue. When they load value on their smart trip cards through our, you know, mechanisms that we have, we hold that as a deferred revenue until we then book it, if you will. As a result of, we look at our methodology on how we record revenue on a regular basis, because as you can imagine, we end up having a large reserve. And as I've looked at the reserve, it's actually surpassed the amount that we have normally had on our books for quite some time. So we're actually analyzing the way how the way we record revenue in our system. An outcome of this is I typically used to have about $17 of value loaded on a smart trip card on average. Because of the improvements we've made and people using smart trip cards now, we probably have an average load balance of $47. So as a result, we're obligated to look at the methodology and how we record revenue, and that's what that is.
The last request is that in a memo that you sent out recently, you made an estimate of the net increase in capital funding to the authority as a result of MAP 21 of about $50 million a year as an increment that was not included in the longer-term forecast that we had about capital revenue in the out years. And I would think that it would make sense for the board to see that as a separate funding stream that could be debated by the board about the allocation of that increment of improvement. We do have, as Mr. Barnes pointed out, a backlog of other issues waiting in a long pipeline that we should consider as part of an increase, an incremental increase, a small increase, actually, in our capital funding so that we can make that as an incremental set of decisions rather than simply pushing it into the large-scale capital budget.
Could I just respond to a couple of points, please? I want to, maybe I didn't make it clear. We will be giving you a three-year revenue, detailed revenue forecast, and a three-year plan on the expenditure side. Your comment on the lessons learned is a very good one, and we do that here. It's through the right sizing that we do. For example, your point to the propulsions, right out spot on. This year in the 13 budget, that's been reduced. We've reduced that down to, we took a long look, Rob and I took a long look at the consumption, and that's been reduced down. So you'll see a dramatic decrease in the budget in fuel. So as we go through this exercise, we are right-sizing and taking in those lessons learned, so those budget categories will be adjusted. Thank you.
Ms. Bowser.
Thanks. I wanted to look at the slide that talks about the ridership for bus and rail. And I would find it helpful to see if there were any corresponding changes in mode share. Are we still maintaining at the same level of mode share? So, in other words, are people not taking the rail and opting to drive, or are people not taking the rail and opting to take the bus, or is it that people are just not commuting because of the job scenario? Because I think this would be a more instructive chart to talk about the congestion question that concerns all of us when we think about 2 million people moving here over the next 30 years. The other question I have, and I appreciate your comments on the $28 million in surplus, and I wanted to know, it seems that in the last year when there were, I think we called it something different, but there was some excess money at the end of the year, we looked at bus service improvements that were relatively small, I think, in the amount of money. And I want to ask what the impact of those changes were and if we should also be thinking about a similar package of improvements.
In fact, we will do that as we come, you know, this is the very beginning of the budget development process. As we come forward through the next few months, we will be presenting suggested initiatives that are in addition to what we provide today in terms of service. And one of those will be potential incremental bus services.
Okay. And also, I'm reminded by what Ms. Hudgens said, and it would be instructive for me if we had some kind of primer, perhaps in this committee or even in a memo, about funding, each state, if you will's history of trying to find dedicated funding. And I recognize I'm newer to the discussion. I'm very familiar with what the district has on the table and what the district will have on the table as we think about how we're going to fund our streetcar. And I think it would just be helpful if I had that information so that when we talk about dedicated funding, we're kind of talking from the same page. And finally, you list as risk wages and jobs. And that reminds me, are we tracking, and this is for you, Mr. Sorrells, because I know we have tremendous hiring goals right now, which is, you know, a good thing. Are we providing kind of a progress update about where we are with hiring?
I track it, and we do provide, I think, quarterly to the board where we are with vacancy rates.
And it's also in the monthly financial report.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hines and then Mr. Downey.
Thanks, Mr. Costa. So I'm looking at the multi-year budget development page in these sort of three categories, and I am thinking about the board's strategic plan, which I know we have not adopted yet, but the conversation around human capital and the importance of achieving those goals to achieving so much else of what we need to do makes me wonder whether as a column here, there needs to be something around human capital and training because it does have budget implications, and it is something I think that we all really want to keep our eye on because I really feel like these categories need to track back to the strategic plan in the greater sense of things, and for the next several years, I think that's just important.
What actually will happen here is, as we know, and we've talked about it a number of times, I guess, in governance committee, is we're in this process of the board getting to a strategic plan, and the board's been working on its schedule. And I said to the board that at the same time, and not really following the right order, we would be working on the multi-year business plans. I will tell you that we've made a lot of progress internally. I've received, I think, from all the departments, their multi-year business plans. We're putting that together, obviously putting a layer on for corporate, so there will be a connection between the strategic plan, the goals, objectives, strategies. That's connected directly to what the action items are in the multi-year business plan, and that's connected to the budget. So that'll all eventually out, and hopefully next year it'll be in the right order so that we don't go through this.
Well, I do appreciate that, Mr. Sorrells, and I commend your management team for all of this work because I think it's really important, which really takes me to my two steps back sort of observation, I guess, which is, you know, for the last several years, we have been hard, diligently, all of us at work, on rebuilding our credibility with the public, on showing that when money comes in, we use it wisely, we achieve goals that matter, that we're restoring, as Rob spent a lot of time helping us understand, that we're doing both catch up and keep up on the state of good repair, and that we're really on this path. And we did that really intentionally because we know that the issue that Kathy raised about the money, we can't win if we don't prove that we are credible. And so the strategic plan is a part of that. The open conversations around governance are all a part of that. And we are beginning, I think, at least I am, to see sort of the shape of the kind of conversation that we are going to need to have with the business leaders, with our riders and our customers, with other governmental agencies, et cetera. So this is really important. This is the game for the next big changes. And so it would be really helpful to me, given where we are right now, to have the timeline reiterated, to have the thinking about how we are going to the region clarified again. And, you know, some of the things Muriel was talking about, some of the lessons learned that we've, or things we're really proud of, beginning to come together in a package. We're going to start our budget process in Arlington, you know, in October or early November. All of us are. And having that, those key messages already teed up for us as we start this, being focused on 16 with that huge delta change as we all start into these processes is actually really important, I think. And so, you know, we had talked about a regional summit. We've talked about a variety of things. It's not clear to me kind of how that's all going to play out.
We'll discuss that in the governance committee meeting later this month.
That's terrific. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Downing?
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on two issues that have been discussed. I think it would be helpful to lay out for the board the MAP 21, that's the name of the federal legislation, how it has related to the past. Keep in mind it is only a two-year bill. The effort will start again right after the beginning of the year to say where does it go in the future. Also, while I do think WMATA will do better under MAP 21, it's a function of the formulas. It's a function of a fairer distribution of state of good repair money at a national level. There may be other transfers that could be done within the budget, but this is not a windfall from the federal side that says you can do what you want with it. It's got to be for state of good repair. What may be even more significant in MAP 21 is legislation with respect to major capital investments. These have typically been only for new starts and new projects. There is now an explicit process and authorization for core capacity improvements. And I think we should be positioning ourselves with the studies, with the recommendations. Basically, they've made it eligible. The funding at MAP 21 will not allow any new projects because a lot of things are already underway. But the door is open to come in and say, what could be done to improve capacity? It must be significant. You must get at least a 10% improvement in capacity, but it's now something that we could be looking at. The other thing, and I've said this before, with respect to dedicated revenues, they come with risks as well. My friends in New York are now trying to put together a budget for calendar year 13, reflecting a $1.5 billion reduction in revenue because one judge in Nassau County said your dedicated revenue source is unconstitutional. So that's a big wake-up.
Any other questions or comments? I'd like to just point out again that this is the beginning of our FY 2014 budget. Also then on page 64 of the handouts are the next steps. We'll also try to incorporate many of the requests that have been brought before the committee into this timeline. So we get you answers in a timely manner. Are there any other matters to come before the committee? If not, this meeting is adjourned.